Welcome to the GoTo Podcast. Each episode covers the brightest and boldest ideas from the world's leading experts in software development. Tune in for practical lessons, compelling theories, and plenty of inspiration. GoTo gathers the brightest minds in the software community to help developers tackle projects today, plan for tomorrow, and create a better future. Stay up to date with the latest in tech through GoTo's top-rated events held online and in person in cities like Amsterdam, London, Copenhagen, and Chicago, and by subscribing to the GoTo Conferences YouTube channel, where you can find thousands more high-quality dev talks. Learn more at gotopia.tech.
Welcome to GoTo Unscripted. We are back, but this time the seats are switched. I'm Adrian Braganza, and I'm here now going to interview Paul Slaughter, who interviewed me initially in an old episode. So welcome, Paul.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm excited. I'm just excited to talk again.
Yes, I am too. For everybody who may not have heard our first episode, can you introduce yourself briefly and what we like to talk about and probably what we'll talk about in this episode?
Yeah. So I'm Paul Slaughter. I am currently a software engineer at GitLab and I've been there for a while, but I've invested a lot of energy in our code review culture and developing some communication ideas that evolved into conventional comments. And that has been referenced a bit on how we can improve communication and code review. And so through GitLab, though, I'm involved in a number of other code review oriented things. And then I was so excited to meet you because you're deeply involved in code review oriented things.
Just a little bit. So that is actually a great segue. The whole reason I met Paul was I wrote a book called Looks Good to Me, and conventional comments is something I absolutely needed to include and talk about in the book as one of those good communication patterns, as Paul was talking about. So I certainly want to start with that. When I was writing that part in my book, and in general, just talking to teams, there's always this friction when it comes to comments and whether or not they're useful, whether or not they're actionable, and whether or not they take too much time for the reviewer and the author to kind of get onto the same page. And so in my own experience, not having seen, you know, conventional comments or anything like that, my team kind of naturally came up with what we called comment signals to kind of tag our comments and to classify them so that we could quickly understand, hey, you need to do some work on this comment, or hey, this comment is purely informational. So I'm super interested in the story behind conventional comments. Like, how did this come about? Is it similar? Were you working with a team and this is how you kind of created it? Or were you just like, we need to, you know, fix a problem and this is what I'm going to do right now? What's the story behind conventional comments?
That's a great question. So it's very, very organic, but also a lot of it oriented around me feeling the problems with some of our code review communication and not accepting just the status quo of like, well, don't ever take code review comments personally. Like, you need to just have thick skin and you need to try to also kind of predict whatever someone else's intentions are. And so when I first joined GitLab, GitLab is a fully remote company. So all of the engineers are working for the most part very asynchronously with each other. And so code review is a very critical activity at GitLab. And people are located from all around the world. So I'm not working with people that are, you know, I speak English as my first and only language. And I work with a lot of other people that know a lot of other languages, have a lot of different other speaking styles and cultural differences. And I remember there's that feeling, you know, sometimes your feelings get hurt in code review. But I remember mainly just feeling frustrated and confused at how, like, I don't understand what someone wants me to do, because I would just get a comment like, hey, it shouldn't be done this way, period. And I would like to engage more in that. So no part of me felt like I was in any position to, oh, and I didn't even know what is a good way to improve our communication. But I started as I gave code reviews, just really thinking about how do I make it super, super clear? And I want to make it really, really easy for whoever receives comments to understand what I am asking for. And how do I make that where there's none of that room for our, everyone seems to have a very self-critical voice in our heads. And there's none of that room for, as I read text asynchronously, for me to misinterpret or have, you know, erupt in fights or anything like that. So for me, over communication is a big deal. And man, just labeling what your intent is really important. But then also, I as I started toying around with this, I've really kind of narrowed in, and like there's like five-ish labels that all of my comments kind of orbit around. I'm always leaving a suggestion, highlighting an issue, or asking a question, and then, or I'm giving a polish, or every once in a while doing a nitpick. And yeah, very rarely does it orbit around that. But for me, it's really helpful for me to give myself a constraint in that way, so that we're not also just holding up merge requests from this very vague, open-ended discussion that gets created.
I like that. And I think that coming from a place of empathy and wanting to be clear, you know, you mentioned you just want whoever receives your comments to understand you. I think that's something we can all relate with, where we just, whenever we write something or whenever we communicate with someone, we want to be understood. And that's usually a point of friction in any type of communication. So the fact that you're over communicating, especially in a company of all remote employees, like, you kind of have to err on the side of over communicating, right? For conventional comments, the typical format for anybody who may not have known it is there's a label. So these are the labels you were talking about. And I'll ask you super quickly what the five are you sort of gravitate towards. There's a label. So like nitpick or love, you know, praise or suggestion. And then you can add some, what you call decorations. And then after that is the subject, or typically the comment itself. Now, this format, is this, has it always been like that, or did it kind of evolve to include all of these pieces?
So I think it's always been like that, because, and it's, you know, for better or for worse. And I mean it in every bit of praise to conventional commits. So it's very much the same format of how we can label our commit messages as mm-hmm. this is a feature or a fix, or this mm-hmm. is a chore or docs or whatever. And I found that to be super helpful as you look through, you know, your commit history. It's like, oh, what is the gist of like this was happening here? And then some really interesting things can happen where, why did I have to revert a feature add? Was that really a feature? Like, you know, something like that. Mm-hmm. The structure was very similar, because I felt like that was very natural for me, but also it's a very common structure that we're going to see in any kind of written communication from software engineers, where we kind of do this labeling. There's other pre-existing stuff as well, because people for years and years have found ways. When you talked about having these comment signals, and some people do these like emoji things, the mm-hmm. the challenge for me was, I want someone that has no context to the process of conventional comments to understand the purpose of it too. So it's like, mm-hmm. I'm trying to over optimize for no context. It needs to be really, really clear. What is the intent and the message of this thing?
Totally. And to your point about emojis, like, even with among ourselves, you know, one emoji could mean something in this generation and it could mean something else in a different generation. So while it might seem obvious to maybe tag comments with emojis, like you said, it may not mean the same thing to everyone else, let alone to the rest of the world. So for the five that you mentioned that you kind of gravitate towards, so if anybody goes to the conventionalcomments.org website, where it's a great description of how to use it and some examples of it, you do list a few labels that people can start to use, but there are more than five. So I'm curious to see what are the five that you tend to end up using the most.
Yeah. So I think three are like I use 90% of the time. And And it's really helpful for me to limit myself too. And that's one of the key features as if I'm adopting this process. When I'm giving feedback, if I am highlighting an issue, asking a question and giving a suggestion all in a paragraph that's unlabeled, like it's really difficult for whoever receives that to respond appropriately or understand maybe what you intend. So I am suggestion, issue, and question are the main labels that I use. And then playing around with this is a blocking question that definitely happens, or this is a non-blocking question, or this is a non-blocking issue. It's like, hey, we're actually kind of introducing a very edge case here, but I can see how this merge request is still profitable. So let's go forward. And then suggestions, sometimes suggestions is kind of, I guess, anytime I'm suggesting a change, whether it be maintainability or sometimes there's an issue, it's like, hey, we actually can't do it this way. Here's a strong suggestion. You really kind of have to do it this way. But sometimes if I want to be a little bit more, I'll replace a suggestion with a to-do. If I'm like saying like, we just have to do this, this is just part of our guidelines of this is just a to-do, what we want to do. But usually it either starts with a suggestion, issue, or question. But then every once in a while, I want to be a bit more descriptive than just a suggestion is pretty vague. Issue is like I'm highlighting an issue. Sometimes I'll pair it with a suggestion. So it's like, issue, hey, you actually broke our homepage. Here's a screenshot of what it looked like before. This is what would have happened if we merged your merge request. And then I'll add, you know, horizontal line and say, suggestion, here's a patch that actually fixes what you're trying to do. What do you think of this? So I'll pair some of these comments together. But if you'll allow me to keep ranting on, I really highly recommend people being more expressive with their labels. And I tried to include some expressive ones. So for me, to do is one. I really like polish. It's people sometimes conflate nitpicks when they're really just wanting like, hey, can we just polish this up? And sometimes that's not necessarily being nitpicky. So if this is the first time I've received the MR and there's been no cycles on it, I will definitely like, hey, here's just some polishing things we can do. We're not talking about like white spacing or like, you know, stuff that a linter would catch, but we're talking about maybe variable naming and that kind of polishing thing. But I do brainstorm and thought a lot. So whenever, because at GitLab, we don't have synchronous engineering collaboration meetings a lot because of time zone inclusivity. And so a lot of our communication is asynchronous. And code review is our chief engineering collaboration vehicle. So when I'm looking at someone's code, this isn't just an approval process. This is a collaboration process. And oftentimes through the merge requests, it's like, oh, this has made me have a new perspective on a problem, or have we thought about doing this kind of thing? So I'll leave brainstorm or thought. I'll use these as labels, and they're usually non-blocking, and sometimes it'll evolve in other discussions, or sometimes in just bringing up that little idea that I had, the author's like, oh my gosh, you're right. We totally got to do it this way. And then the whole merge request looks different. And that's a good thing, because then we collaborated. Yeah. So three main labels: issue, suggestion, question. But I have, you know, maybe 5 or 10 that are in the toolbox that I pick and choose when I want to be expressive.
That's always good to have that. Usually if we limit ourselves too much, then we're spending more time trying to work within those constraints than just, you know, sure, just add another label or just add another comment signal. Now, for anybody that may have heard Paul say merge requests, that's because GitLab uses merge requests or MRs. So this is basically similar to pull requests or PRs. If you're listening and you're like, what's a merge request? So just wanted to throw that out there.
Thanks for clarifying. Yeah, I'm intentionally not explaining because it's like, what do you mean you don't use GitLab? What other products could you possibly be using?
Yes, that's there are other tools out there, folks. Just a quick reminder. So I'm very, very curious. Now, I know that you are, I would say, very lucky to have this all remote environment, and you speak about the code review being kind of your chief area where you collaborate. This is where you mostly communicate with your team members, and this is where a lot of discussion happens, and naturally because of the way your organization works. But for example, in some of the comments, I know I ran into this issue where you know, sure, we're using, let's say, conventional comments, and we agreed upon some labels. Sometimes folks will use one label and then they get hung up on the actual label to use. I'll give you an example. Someone writes some feedback and they make it a strong suggestion. But when the reviewer, the author, excuse me, receives that, and it's clear that the reviewer is making a strong suggestion, but they don't agree with it. They actually think it's not the level of suggestion or something that really needs to be worked on. It's more of a nitpick. So this kind of tends to happen, even if we have these tools like the conventional comments or labeling them to be more clear. Do you have any stories or advice on if you've run into that and how to get past that? It's basically people having a different opinion of what the labels mean and the gravity of that comment.
Yeah, a couple of things. Is one, I wouldn't recommend labeling something strong suggestion. That might come off a little strong. But I also might be, you know, a little too polite at times. But I think that's a feature and a good thing. The labels help me classify my intent and my posture. And when it comes to review, I shouldn't come thinking that I'm going to be making all these objectively true statements. I should be coming with a posture of curiosity. And this is my suggestion. And what I like it though, when someone is now the discussion, because I've labeled it as suggestion, the discussion could be like, oh, well, I actually think this might just be a little bit of a non-blocking nitpick. I see that you think, what do you think? And we're talking about the kind of, now the topic on that thread has become, what is the severity of this, and how do we feel about it individually, and how do we move forward? As opposed to if I don't label anything and I just say, do this thing. Sometimes the conversation then just devolves into why or why not we should do that thing. And then I will give you my reasons, and we write essays to each other and we collect data and we figure out which thing was the best thing. When in reality, we could have just short-circuited all of it because, yeah, you're right, this is probably non-blocking. We keep going. Or let's open up a follow-up issue for it, because we're now discussing the nature of the comment as opposed to the comment itself. In so many ways, I don't see that as something to avoid. It's a feature that happens because it's like, hey, I see that this is a suggestion to you. Or if someone does suggestion blocking, that's usually how I would see it. I see this as a suggestion blocking to you. I feel like this is non-blocking for these reasons. And that's a really helpful way to, that's a more productive conversation for sure. And hopefully you are operating in a team where we trust, like, okay, I'll follow up on that. I love when I read your book and you talked about the working agreements, and that really helps establish a culture of trust that really helps accelerate some of the code review discussions.
Absolutely. I think that what helps here too is that your team, or any team where this is a bit more functional, comes from a place of objectivity and, again, not taking any feedback as personal or taking it as, you know, the person who's reviewing has more meaningful feedback or comments than what I could ever give. I think a lot of people forget that if you are open to the discussion and there is objective and constructive feedback to talk it out. There's nothing wrong with talking it out. And I think if both parties approach it in that way, rather than just assuming they have to take everything that the reviewer says is law, then I think a lot of people will have a better time with code reviews.
Oh yeah. I like to, here's another adding to it. And then I have a question for you. When the author, and I'm anticipating my code being reviewed, I try to frame everything, and you write about this really well, but I try to frame everything. I want the reviewer to want to approve and accept it. Like, I want them to feel really good about it. And a lot of that comes from, I want them to feel a sense of ownership with it. And a lot of that means they will have comments and suggestions on it. And sometimes they're going to choose to name something I wouldn't do. But when I'm submitting code, I've got to realize, yeah, this is ours. And it's going to be a lot better when we can all co-own it. And so a lot of times this sounds weird. I will leave things in the code knowing that this reviewer is going to want to change it, and that's okay with me, and I'll let them ask for it, and then I'll change it, and now we have this sense of ownership of it. There's a story that was, I remember hearing back in the old days of programming, computer science. They had some software team was dealing with a difficult customer. They were building like some sort of like chess simulator or whatever, and they're dealing with a difficult customer. And the customer, no matter what, just was always asking for things to change. And one of the engineers picked up on this, and they were running up to the deadline and anticipated. They added this weird like flying duck around the queen's head or something, knowing that in the meeting, the person's going to find something, wants to change something. And so they were just going to sneak something in there so that the person would be like, oh, well, can we get rid of that duck? It was like, sure, we can do that. And then like, okay, we're good. We got past that customer meeting. That happens in code reviews. Like when you submit something, people are going to want to contribute and change things, not necessarily out of malice or a bad thing. That's a really good thing. Yeah. So as you're saying, is not being taking things personally when change requests come. However, this is the question I want to ask you.
Sure.
How do you feel about the statement of like, oh, you know, these are just about the code. It's not about you. You know, don't take these things personally. Like, have you seen this play out in your experience? Do you feel like, I think there's some wisdom in there, but there's some danger zones in there as well. Like,
I think the intent behind those pieces of advice or guidelines, like, you know, focus on the code, not the developer, or don't take things personally. It's just about the code. It can go both ways if the team is not on the same page about what that means. That's why I tend to qualify that with something like a team working agreement, where if you're all on the same page about what different things mean, then you're more likely to not have misinterpretations of that. So I have seen this been misinterpreted the wrong way, which is focus on the code, not the developer. So someone will maybe make a suggestion on a code review, and it's a really harsh suggestion, or the way that it was written was it's very aggressive, it's very abrasive, and it may still focus on the code. You know, they may not be calling out the author directly or saying that they did it in a stupid way, but they're kind of hiding behind that guideline to be a jerk. And that's very manipulative. And I've seen that on teams where they're like, well, you know, for another example is maybe someone using their seniority or using their status on the team. Maybe they've been there the longest, or they have the most experience in something. And so whatever they say goes, and they kind of, again, use that as an excuse. Like, I'm focusing on the code. Or they hide behind, I'm only doing this to make the code base better. I'm trying to make it great. But what they're really doing underneath is, this is the way I want the code base to be. And I want everyone else to fall in line. And so in that sense, if people are doing that behind the pretense of, you know, I'm being objective, but really they're not, that's one thing to watch out for and to kind of call that out when that happens. Because yes, they may not be so direct and, you know, attack you or anything like that, but that's still a very big problem, hiding behind the pretense of wanting to make the code better.
Yeah. I've heard that this, you know, sentiment of, And there's wisdom in, like, as the individual, when you're receiving things of like, okay, I'm not my code. Don't take these things personally. Even if someone comes with that really strong-handed comment, it's like, okay, so in some sense, that's good. But I have seen it used the way you were talking about. And I think that there could be a tendency for people to set up a false dichotomy in their heads of, well, we can't be overly, overly polite or we won't get anything done. Yeah. It's like, well, no, the answer is in the blessed middle road of like, we got to take care of each other. But I think this thing happens where if you treat it that people aren't going to, the people's feelings, I wish I had a better word for that. People's feelings are going to be connected to their work because you want your team to really care. If your team cares about what they do, there's nothing you're not going to be able to do. Like, you want a team that cares and puts themselves into it. And that's a very rewarding experience too. It's a very rewarding job to be involved in. I want to care about what I'm doing. But because of that is like, yeah, when I communicate, if I'm communicating in a terms of like, hey, your work product was okay, but it wasn't good enough. Like, here's the thing that'll make it better. And you do that ad nauseum, like they're going to feel like, oh, either A is like, this sucks. Like I'm never acknowledged for anything good that I do. Or B is, oh, I'm never going to, or they'll have that comment of like, oh, I can't do that. I'm not, they'll totally internalize that perspective as well. I think the posture we bring to code review is so critical, and it's a collaborative together working on a common problem. And that's why labels for me are really, really important, because I sometimes when we want to just polish things up, it's like that's a way different posture of communication of like, hey, this was really good. Here's just a quick patch that polishes some things up. As opposed to before I approve this, you need to check all these other things you missed. Like that is not a very enjoyable engagement. I highly recommend anybody listening to just really reflect on themselves. What's the posture you're bringing to code review? And the conventional comments is just a helpful reminder. They're not going to force a posture because you could totally misuse it in a bad way. Mm-hmm. But it's a gentle reminder of like, hey, we're to be creating suggestions. We should be collaborating together in these ways that are constructive, not destructive. I don't know, what would be a destructive label? I don't know. I'm not going to
gross.
Or, that would be good. That would be good.
Or WTF. Or.
Oh, I'd love that.
Yeah. I've seen many. And I mean, again, your mileage may vary with your team. You know, some teams might be completely okay with this. And as long as you're all on the same page of what those mean, like, sure. But I don't know if that's very professional, but it'd be hilarious to use labels like that. But no, I totally agree. And the how you approach code review as a team is always going to determine how well that process goes for your team. Switching gears a bit, since you are so entrenched and dedicated to the code review process at GitLab, I've also seen that you've started this code review weekly workshops. Based on my last look, there was about 39 episodes and it started in 2022. Can you tell everyone what is it? It seems like a really cool thing. It almost looked like a retrospective with your team about, you know, what you could improve or what is not going right or what did go right in a previous code review. But could you tell us more about that?
So to frame it, I would suggest any organization to pick up a similar practice. I'm not promoting like, oh, check out our code review weekly workshop. Feel free to do that. But GitLab is a weird company where we record all of our meetings and we post them publicly. So if you want to see how we do things, it's all very, very transparent. The code review weekly workshop grew because we received a lot of, there was a growing problem for years and years of you get a different experience based on who's reviewing your code. And that's I think many organizations would empathize with that problem. At the same time, we had some organizational issues where our maintainer set was being overloaded and we really needed to grow the amount of maintainers, but that's a risky thing to do with something with the development process like GitLab, because the role that those maintainers hold is very critical to the quality of just the maintainability of the code base, but also the end user quality. So there's a lot of GitLab is a large monolithic software that like any kind of project, you just have these isms that grow with the project that as you have experience with the project, you kind of learn, oh, wait, we got to be careful about this context that very few people realize. And it's also open source. So we can't always afford to trust the author, and for lack of a better word. So we just needed to have where we were at least discussing what was code review happening with other people? And like, so just having the conversation happening of like, hey, I had this weird code review and this is how I approached it. This is what the thread looked like. Or, hey, I had this thing, totally missed this thing. It caused an incident. Like, we've got to make sure we watch out for these things when we do code review. So it's just this very open forum for the GitLab team members that are engaged in code review or curious about it or want to learn how they can be more efficient, or little hacks that they've developed themselves, just to share that with each other, with their team, so that we can try to normalize the code review experience as community contributors or other people submit merge requests. And then because we have a large number of engineers and we do something really well, which is for the most part, there's not a lot of just intergroup code reviews. We try to have all the engineers are reviewing each other's stuff. And that's really, really good because it helps break silos, but it's also challenging because sometimes you don't have all the context and things. So yeah, the code review weekly workshop developed because I realized we're going to have a lot more maintainers soon. We have a lot more people developing code. We've had this problem where code review was an inconsistent experience. And I think it's going to look different for different teams, but I think it's really good to keep talking about how code reviews happen and just keep that conversation going. In the background, as people engage in that discussions, you'll see the code review experience start to normalize to a consistent experience.
I like the intent behind that, especially because you have so many more reviewers in your pool. So I can empathize with the you know, I get a different experience every time depending on who my reviewer is. And I'm very curious. So let's say someone does bring something up, like I had a weird experience or my review is not quite the same. Does this mean that the person who had that experience and the reviewer who may have given that experience, is this almost like couples therapy? Like, do they go to this workshop and work out what they did or try to tell each other what it did? Or is it just the person who went through this type of odd review talk about it with other folks?
That's a great question. So no, I haven't facilitated a review couples therapy yet. So it's usually one person sharing either they've received something that was really good and that's a great thing to share, or they received something that was challenging and that's a great thing to share. Mm-hmm. And it's a great thing to share in a way that's non-blaming. Like, you are doing it publicly. And so we're sharing it from this place of curiosity of like, what happened here? And that takes a little bit of work of like, okay, I have to really understand how I feel about it. I got to process that. But the result is really positive, where we take all of these experiences as learning experiences. So, and I think you say this in your book, and it's really good. And it's something that we don't do at GitLab a lot. And part of that is because of our organization. But you bring up a lot of like, hey, short circuit, let's have a sync call to like flesh something out. And I think sometimes if you just, when you've had these async essays going back and forth, it takes just a 5 minute. You just have to look at each other and acknowledge each other's humanity and that we're both probably have the right goals in mind, and then we can move forward. So yeah, it's not necessarily couples therapy. I love the idea though.
Well, I wonder, because I'm thinking about this concept and wondering if that would have helped, you know, some of my earlier experiences where I had a really bad review. And let's say we had something like this, you know, let's say I share, this is what happened in my review. I think this part was challenging. This part didn't really help me align with the reviewer. And so I guess from my perspective, if I was the one who received the challenging review, I would want the reviewer in some form, I would believe, to either change or to at least understand why it was such a challenging review. So yeah. I know that you post them publicly. I see that. And I would be like, if I was on the other side, if I was a reviewer, I'd be like, oh gosh, I would watch these every week and be like, I hope they're not talking about me, you know, or you could be the complete other kind of reviewer where you're like, I don't care, you know? That was me. And, you know, so just curious about that.
It's a great question. And I think it is worth being extra thoughtful, because I think I had always in the past, during my early years at GitLab, So another collaboration vehicle I tried to really promote at GitLab was doing pair programming, having regular pair programming times. And it was brought up too, like, well, what about doing like pairing up on a code review? And that always felt weird to me because I felt like I don't want someone to feel like they're ganged up on, you know. But in hindsight, we've totally done this in the Code Review Weekly Workshop and it was really, really good. And I think there's something about it, knowing that this is going to be this, the intent here is for it to be public. This is, we are learning and we're always assuming good intent about everybody we're trying to, that's involved here. So even if someone did receive a very difficult review, the conversation will be heavily seasoned with assuming good intent on the reviewer, identifying like, oh yeah, maybe they could have done this. Here's, you know, whenever this has happened to me, this is some things that I did. If you feel like it was like this, here's the process for doing it. But there's definitely some like episodes that we didn't post a recording of because it's like, we want to be cautious because it's funny. Code review elicits some feelings, you know, and I don't think the answer is to just, well, you shouldn't feel anything about it. I think that's a good thing, but we should be curious about why are these feelings elicited when we engage in code review and try to solve them.
That's a great way to put an end to this particular episode. The time flies by so fast, but yeah, Paul, we could talk about this forever. I'm like considering we should start a code review podcast. So I don't know. There's so much more to talk about.
I'm joking.
We'll collab.
If we can, I'd like to sneak in one quick thing.
Yes, please.
I feel obliged, and I've engaged in a lot of engineer discussions, and there's a lot of engineers that don't like using things like conventional comments, don't like being overly polite in the communication, and I totally get it and understand. And they can feel like they code review is, they want to maximize efficiency in their communication. Mm-hmm. I personally have really had to hone in on efficiency with code review, and I have developed a number of efficiency tactics that help me. I do a lot of code review at GitLab, and I also try to make sure I'm maintaining politeness. So don't ever think that being polite doesn't mean you can be efficient. But some of the main things, and we talked about this offline, and I asked, could you please put this in your book? Is using patches. The more code that's in your comments is better. The less English language someone has to parse. So I'm always reviewing code locally and generating patches and sending that. And that's 95% of my code reviews, I'm using patches. It helps save so much time. And rather than shotgunning 20 polished comments, I have just one polished comment. Here's the patch. Feel free to take or leave whatever you want to. And that kind of thing makes a huge difference. And then the other thing that I do is I set a timer for myself when it comes to code review, because after a certain amount of time has elapsed, I'm not really going to be, I'm not going to be leaving suggestions and patches as much as I'm going to be asking questions now. And that's a whole other thing we could elaborate sometime, but I feel like it pairs well with the politeness conversation, because one of the feedback is always like, I don't have time to be polite. I'm like, you really do.
There's always room for empathy and being considerate. I agree. Well, thank you so much, Paul. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you, Adrian.
Thanks you everybody for listening to this other episode of GoTo Unscripted, and who knows, maybe we'll be back for more. There's certainly a whole list of things we could continue talking about. But until next time, thanks everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the GoTo Podcast. Head over to gotopia.tech to discover lots more content from the brightest minds in software development.